Fifth narrative. The story continued by Franklin Blake. I woke that morning ignorant of what I had said or done after the drug first took effect. I opened my eyes and looked into Rachel's. When we arrived in London, a boy called Gooseberry met Brough at the station. After listening to him, Brough said he had to leave immediately on important business. He pulled me to a taxi and told the driver to hurry to Lombard Street. "News of Luca," he said. He was seen leaving his house accompanied by two policemen in plain clothes. Gooseberry came into the crowded bank with us. Two men came up to Brough as soon as we entered. "Have you seen him?" asked the lawyer. They said Luca had arrived half an hour ago and gone into an inner office. "Let's wait then," Brough said. I couldn't see any Indians anywhere. "They must have a spy here," Brough said. Gooseberry pulled on his coat. Luca was leaving an office with his two guards. "Watch him," Brough whispered. "If he passes the stone to anyone, he will do it here." Luca went straight to the door without noticing us. In the crowd, I saw his hand move suddenly as he passed a short, fat man. At the door, his guards placed themselves on either side of him. They left, followed closely by one of Brough's men. I pointed out the man to Brough. "Did you see anything?" I said. He shook his head. Neither Brough's second man nor Gooseberry were anywhere to be seen. "What do we do now?" I asked. "Come back to my office and wait," he replied. Brough's second man was waiting there when we arrived. "I'm sorry, sir," he said. "I was sure I saw him pass something to an elderly gentleman. It turns out he's a respectable doctor in Westminster." Brough asked him where Gooseberry was. He didn't know. As we were having supper at Brough's office, the man who followed Luca returned. Luca had gone straight home and not gone out again. His guards had left later. "He would never have sent them home if he had the stone," said Brough. The house was being carefully watched. There had been no sign of the Indians. We waited until it was time for Brough to go home. I returned to Rachel, leaving my address in case the boy returned. When I got home after midnight, my servant informed me that Gooseberry had called. He would return early the next day. As I was having breakfast, there was a knock on my door. Expecting Gooseberry, I was surprised when Sergeant Cuff entered. "I got back from Ireland last night," he said. "I presume you've come to get back your reputation," I said. "I admit I made a mess of the case," he replied unwillingly. "But no, sir. I have come to return Lady Verinder's great generosity." I told him everything. To my surprise, he took Ezra Jennings's trance theory extremely seriously. He agreed with Jennings that I must have taken the stone back to my room, but not that I had hidden it there. "Well, what did I do then?" I asked. "Don't you have any idea?" he replied. I shook my head. He went to my desk, wrote something, and put the paper in an envelope. "Open this when you know the truth," he said. "I made a mistake last year, but not this year." I put the letter in my pocket. "Now," he said, "let's wait and see if Gooseberry turns up." Gooseberry arrived at 10 o'clock. As soon as he heard Cuff's name, his huge eyes never left the famous detective. "Come, my lad," said the sergeant. "Tell us all. Where did you go?"
"I followed a tall man with a black beard, dressed like a sailor. He left the bank in a hurry and called a taxi. I ran after it and hung on behind."
Brough's secretary arrived at this point, and I had to leave the room. Before I could return, Cuff came hurrying out with Gooseberry. Quick, Cuff said. Get a taxi immediately. 5 minutes later, we were on our way east, with Gooseberry explaining to me what happened.
The taxi went to the Port of London, sir. The sailor with the black beard got out and spoke to an officer of the Rotterdam steamboat. It was leaving next morning, and no passengers could come on board until then. Then he left the port. In the street, I noticed a man, dressed like a mechanic, walking on the opposite side of the road, watching the sailor. The sailor went into an eating house. I waited outside, watching the mechanic. After a minute, a taxi stopped next to him. A dark-faced person inside spoke to him. Then the taxi moved slowly on down the street, and the mechanic crossed the road and went into the eating house. I waited a bit, then went in after him. I only had 2 pence, sir, but I had a good meal.
What did you see in the eating house? I asked.
The sailor reading a newspaper at one table, the mechanic reading a newspaper at another. It was dusk before the sailor got up and left, looking suspiciously around him out in the street. He didn't seem sure about where to go next. Me and the mechanic followed him to Lower Thames Street, where he stopped in front of a pub, the Wheel of Fortune. I followed him in, followed by the mechanic. It was very crowded. The sailor asked for a bed. No, the landlord said, they were full. A barmaid corrected him. Room 10 was empty. I noticed, just before a waiter took the sailor upstairs to his room, that the mechanic had disappeared. I waited. The landlord was called for. I heard angry voices upstairs. The mechanic appeared at the top of the stairs, looking very drunk. The landlord pulled him downstairs, arguing with him, and threw him out. It seems he'd been discovered in number 10. I noticed that as soon as he was outside, he wasn't drunk anymore. I waited. Nothing else happened, so I decided to go back to Mr. Bruff's office. As I left, I noticed the mechanic on the other side of the street, staring up at a lit window in the roof.
The Indians didn't risk being seen at the bank, said Cuff. They employed someone else. In the Wheel of Fortune, their man hears the number of the sailor's room. The Indians would certainly want a description of the room. He was found in the room when the sailor went up and pretended to be drunk. As for what happened after Gooseberry left, we can only hope. When we entered the Wheel of Fortune, it was clear that something was wrong. The barmaid said the landlord was upstairs and was not to be bothered. Sergeant Cuff ignored this and went up. The barmaid called out, and the landlord, obviously in a temper, appeared in front of us at the top of the stairs. The words, "I am Sergeant Cuff," had a magical effect. "I have some inquiries to make, sir," said the sergeant, "about a dark man dressed as a sailor who slept here last night."
"Good God!" exclaimed the landlord. "That's the man who's upsetting the whole house at the moment."
"Can we see him, please?" asked the sergeant.
"Nobody's been able to see him since 7 this morning. That was the time he asked to be called. The door's locked. There's been no reply from inside."
"Could he leave the room in any way other than the door?" interrupted the sergeant.
"The room is under the roof. There's a window leading onto the roof. You don't think he's left without paying, Sergeant, do you?"
As he spoke, a carpenter arrived to open the door. It wasn't easy. A piece of furniture had been placed against it inside. When the door was finally pushed open, we saw the man, dressed, lying on the bed inside with a pillow over his face. Sergeant Cuff removed it. The man's coffee-coloured face was perfectly calm, his eyes wide open. He was dead. I felt a soft pull on my coat-tail.
"Look, sir,"
whispered Gooseberry, pointing to a little wooden box, open, empty. There was a torn sheet of paper inside, with the Lombard Street Bank's name on it. Inside this envelope is a small wooden box containing an extremely valuable object, left in the bank's care by Mr. Septimus Luker. The box can only be removed from the bank by Mr. Luker himself and by no other person.
The man's face is disguised, said Cuff. Look.
He pointed to a thin line of white just below the man's hair.
Let's see what's under this, he said, taking a handful of the man's hair.
My nerves were not strong enough. I had to turn away.
He's pulled off his hair,
whispered Gooseberry. There was a pause. Then a cry of astonishment from the landlord. Cuff asked him for water and a towel.
He's washing off his face,
the boy went on. I heard footsteps. Cuff appeared beside me.
Before you look round, sir, he said, open the envelope I gave you this morning.
I opened it.
Read the name, Mr. Blake, written inside.
I read the name, looked round, and saw him lying on the bed, half of his makeup washed off. It was Godfrey Ablewhite.